Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My name is Monty Walden. My guest today is Viviana Malafarina. It's a great name, Malafarina. From the Basilisco Winery. Where is the Basilisco Winery?
Basilisco is in Basilicata, on a beautiful volcano, 600 meters above sea level.
And the volcano's name is?
Vulture.
The vulture.
Yes.
So Aglianico del Vulture,
exactly,
which is a red wine. And who is the owner of Basilisco?
The owner is Antonio Capaldo, which is the same owner of Feudi di San Gregorio.
And how long have you worked there?
Since he bought it. So I started 2010. And my first vintage is 2011.
Okay, so how? Just tell us a little bit about the size of the estate. How many hectares of vineyard do you have at Basilisco?
We have total vineyards are 25 hectares. The property is 50 hectares. Everything is organic. And the winery produces around 55 to 65,000 bottles.
Okay, and on the other land that you have, do you have olives or is it just spare land or uncultivated?
No, mostly olives or fruit.
And what kind of fruit? Lemons? Oranges?
Everything. No. Like we have, I don't know all the name in English.
Yeah, in Italiano.
Peaches, albicocche,
so
fichi,
apricots, figs.
Ciliegie, amarene.
Cherries, like bitter cherries.
Mere, pele.
Pears and apples.
Yes.
Oh, that's a nice mix.
Yeah.
So who was the previous owner then? Was it some old contadino, some old
peasant? Yeah, exactly,
peasant?
Yes. Yeah?
And he sold because he retired?
Well, mostly the old people from Basilicata, they kept the vineyards until they could, and then the new generation preferred to try to work in the big factories.
In the city,
yes,
like in Potenza, which is the main, exactly, which is the capital city of the Basilicata region. Okay, so tell me about the wines that you make. How many different Aglianico wines do you make?
We make one white wine, which is a Fiano.
Okay.
Only about 5,000 to 6,000 bottles per year. All the rest is Aglianico, and I make mostly two labels, which are the selection wine, Basilisco, and the entrance wine, which is Teodosio, 100% Aglianico, all of them. And then three crus, which are just a single vineyard. One is called Fontanelle, which is a young vine, and one is Croix, which is a Piano di Croce. They all the different contrade in Barile.
So the contrade is like the local, how the areas were divided up locally with names relevant to that local area, so people knew whose land was whose.
And then the third one is Storico, which is a vineyard which is over 80 years old.
So Storico means historical, yeah?
Yeah, and it actually is like the old...
So 80 years old?
More than 85. We don't know exactly how long ago it's been planted, but it's like a Prefiloxera Piedefranco, and it's the growing is a Capanno, which is like the old tomato style with canes. We have about a production which is, in a good vintage, is about 12 to 15 quintals per hectare.
Which is not a lot, yeah.
No.
So when you say Piedefranco, you mean ungrafted?
Yeah, ungrafted.
And you can do that because the soil is?
It's volcanic. It's like
volcanic,
a sand.
Yeah. So you're basically on a volcano, aren't you? Or an extinct volcano?
Yes. The volcano is 1,300 meters. We are about 620 meters above sea level. And all the soils are, like I would say, 95% just the pure lavic volcanic soil, more or less irony. And then there is a small quantity of soil which are like marna, clay,
so
arenaria.
Marl and clay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And arenaria, I don't know.
Which is sandstone.
Yeah, exactly. So that gave a very beautiful possibility of have a different Aglianico in a very small area. Everything is in the Council of Barile, 25 hectare, and I would say probably at least a 15 big difference between them.
When you say a 15 days difference of ripening?
No, different in taste. You can have it on the table and you wouldn't say it's one wine. You can actually say they're all very different between themselves.
So what are the different, just go through the wines, the three red wines, and just go through how you ferment them. Do you ferment them differently? And then if you do, what the main flavors are and ageability and shape of these wines is?
The vinification is per vineyard. So the old winery is in caves. So the container I use are quite small, normally 50 hectoliters. So every vineyard is one or more of these vats.
So 50 hectoliters is about 6,000 bottles worth per vat.
And so every vineyard has a different vinification system, but just basically because I started, when I started like almost 8 years ago, I started just to work with a torch on my forehead and to see what was going on when I do the pump up.
Because you're in a cave, right?
Yeah.
You're literally in a cave, yeah.
So I just found out that there is one vineyard that need less time of this pump over, how do you call
pumping
it?
Pumping over, yeah.
And some other one which need longer time before to move up the head of skins. So the vinification is really tailored on my observation. Averagely, the wine stays with the skins like between 24 to maximum 32 days, and again after that the second part of the work is in wood, and also depending on what is the characteristic of the vineyard, the ability of the potential. The way they were gonna work with the wood, it changes a lot. Like to give you an example, out of the two crews, the main crews, the 15 years old has a 30% of new wood. With the 30 years old, I did it in 2013 and never again, because it's been the wood has been overwhelming on the characteristic of the vineyard.
What about food matching? What does Aglianico from the Vulture go well with?
Aglianico has two main characteristics, three like actually. The two, like I would say, the notes it goes first of all famous for are tannins and acidity. And then depending on how do you work with it, it can be more and less or less powerful. But basically it works very well with all the food which are very greasy because of the acidity. And also it works very well with normally, tendentially, culturally. They use it to grill meats or aged cheese or very rich sauce for pasta.
Okay.
So it's mostly that is.
So what about ageability of Aglianico?
That is a nice story because we don't have actually much of history about it. So the potential is huge, but we don't know actually how long it can last because we don't have a deep culture of good wine making since a long time. So like I would say that what we taste now has easily 20-25 years of history. But I've been trying Aglianico not from our area because we didn't have the story yet, but from the late 50s, which are amazing. So it's just a matter of build up this new story.
Okay, so one question is, people think obviously you're in the far south of Italy, not that far from North Africa effectively, Beta Nicata. So people think, right, you're going to be picking these you're on a volcano, pretty dry soil, not much organic matter, you're going to be picking these Aglianico grapes in August, right?
No way, no. Obviously, Aglianico is very like a late ripening, and plus we are 620 meters above sea level, so we normally start harvest between the 10 and 15 of October, and we end by the end of October, beginning of November.
So this is one of the last wines to be picked in Italy, apart from, say, sweet wines like with botrytis grapes.
We normally do quite a competition with friends from Valtellina.
Valtellina is an alpine wine grape. So it's amazing that you've got, at one end of Italy, you've got the Alps, you know, go skiing, and actually you have a lot of snow around Potenza as well, don't you? You have snow in winter. It's one of the coldest areas in Italy, even though it is one of the closest regions to Africa.
Yes,
it's amazing
you've
got that. Yeah. So how easy is it to find pickers that are willing to go out and pick by hand? You mentioned this pruning system that you have, which we'll investigate, but that has to be hand-picked. So is there a ready supply of people that want to go and climb up a volcano in the middle of late October, early November to go and pick Aglianico grapes?
Unfortunately, yes, because Basilicata is quite a poor region and a lot of people need work and they are locals. We don't need to have immigration for work because the people doesn't find a work.
Yes, but probably Italy's second or third poorest region economically.
I would say so, yeah.
So just tell me a little bit, you mentioned some of the older vines. A lot of the vines are ungrafted because you're on this volcanic soil. And you mentioned a particular way of training the grapes to individual canes. Just what was that called? And how does it work?
It's called Accapanno.
Accapanno.
And it's the traditional way. And they are accannate, just put on a cane. And actually the old vineyards, they all have the lower part near the water, which like, I don't know how to say, fosso.
The drainage ditches or streams, yeah.
And they have these canes that grow spontaneously and they are part of the heritage with the vineyards.
So it's kind of like a bamboo, it's a reed, a strong reed that you can then cut, or rush that you can cut, and then you could use it when it dries, it makes a strong cane,
exactly.
And you're using that to support
and
the vines.
And they use it in a tripod shape to sustain the vines, and actually that is the very, very old style of viticulture. That's why the region is called also Enotria, because of Enos and Trios, which were the canes. And the idea is that the vines are basically made to grow wild, not to be tamed by the humans. So actually what's happening in that kind of culture is that they can express their energy if they have, or don't if they don't. but they are not sort of under constriction in growing. And for a very old vineyard, it's very important because it can just really steam out what is, I wouldn't know how to express, but it's like what is too much is expressed by the leaves and the branches, and there is a lot of space to do it because it's like a bush, basically.
So what you're saying is the vine can really express itself in the way that it wants to. It just gets a bit of support from these canes, but it's not growing in a like a hedge, like a straight row.
And they are not trimmed.
It can grow laterally.
Yeah, they're not trimmed, they're not blocked in the way they want to grow. They just grow up, like all the plants, if they can, they just grow up into the...
skywards.
Yeah, and that's just the nature, so they are happy.
What about picking? That must be, you know, if they're growing a little bit higgledy-piggledy, it must slow picking down, but you're saying that you're actually getting better quality fruit?
Yes, but like all the others, actually, what's happened is that the fruit you want to pick is the one more close to the...
to the soil.
To the vine itself.
No, to the trunk.
Yeah, so basically you always have still, they are hanging like socks around, like in a normal vineyard. So it's very easy to do the picking, and we don't pick what is on top, what is called the Feminella.
So that's the, on the secondary shoots.
Yeah, because they are less full of polyphenol and taste. They are more acidic and more diluted, so they use less to make good wine.
So the vine's being clever. It knows that the warmth, because it's getting some reflected heat from the sun on this dry soil, so the lower grapes are the ones, what it's trying to do is make babies, right? Make it's seeds.
Yeah, they should.
So those bunches will have the sugar and the ripeness to attract birds. Yeah. Tradition, that's what we.
And they actually also have the protection of the leaves.
So they get some shade.
Yeah.
Are they easier to ferment these ones from the?
Very easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they do have a stress moment when they are around 3 bubble in sugar, let's say, almost at the end of the fermentation, because there is a lot of sugar and a lot of alcohol. So sometimes the yeast can be
stressed
by the alcohol presence, but the begin of the fermentation is very immediate, and also the process is quite fast. So the only fragile moment is when there is too much alcohol already.
Do you try and slow the fermentation down initially when it gets a bit too fast?
I do.
We to
use
avoid
the
stress.
Temperature control, yeah.
Do you use any nutrients, yeast nutrients or not?
No,
you try not to?
No. I do, but I use yeast.
Yeah, okay.
So it's like a neutral yeast, but I don't need to do any nutrition, despite the fact that the volcanic soils are very poor in nitrogen. So that is another factor of stress for the fermentation.
So why is nitrogen important to have in a fermentation?
Because it's what yeast like to eat.
Right, it's food for them. It's their breakfast, lunch, and dinner,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. What about the main markets for the wine? Is it mainly sold in Italy, the Aglianico, or is it sold on export markets?
I know that, if you talk about Aglianico in general, mostly what I can hear in the area is that the majority of producers sell more abroad than in Italy. For me, the market is 50-50, and what is abroad is more Swiss, Germany, and States.
Okay. Cool. I just want to say thanks to my guest today, Viviana Malafarina.
Thank you.
Telling us about Basilisco.
Thanks.
Basilisco and Basilicata on the Vulture, the Vulture, the volcanic mountain, where Aglianico finds its favourite home.
Yes, it is.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.